Real quick, if you're new to the show, please sign up to the Combat Learning newsletter at combatlearning.com/newsletter. I'll send you cheat sheets on how to transform your drills into maximum skill building games and get you up to speed on the science of motor skill learning for martial arts. Plus, you'll never miss a show. Go to combatlearning.com/newsletter now to get those resources. Welcome back to the Combat Learning Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Josh Peacock, fourth degree black belt in Taekwondo and a martial arts skill training specialist. In this third installment of our interview with Greg Satters, we unpack in gritty detail how Greg approaches both task simplification and task complexification. There's quite a bit of information out there about how to scale down games, but not a lot on how, why, or when to scale them up, even beyond the complexity of free sparring. There's a lot to glean here across practice design to curriculum development to helping individuals achieve their optimum level of challenge point. A quick reminder, if you benefit from the show, consider going to combatlearning.com/support to buy me a coffee. This is a donation platform that supports the show, and I really, really appreciate it. Alternatively, you can support the show by joining the waiting list for the next cohort of Combat Learning workshops at combatlearning.com/waitlist. So if you're excited to jump in, hit the subscribe button on your podcatcher and enjoy the show. Okay, so what are the differences between your foundations and all levels classes? How does the task simplification and the organization of games look different between the two?
It becomes more complex. So the variability of the day increases. So how many different alignments we work on or how many different effects we're looking for, that goes up, right? And we make it complex. We take simple action and we try to bind it together into an outcome. So like an example would be, all right, we're starting here at the hips. Our job is to clear, we're working on segmentation. That's the objective. So we're going to try to clear the hands to gain access to the chest or back, get under or behind the elbows, gain access to the shoulders. So that's a serial event, but there is actually not serial because we don't know how the person's going to respond. They could move their hands in a wrong way. We get access to their elbows right away, or they could position their hands and elbows wrongly. So we gain access to their shoulders right away. So it's not serial in its procedure, but it almost is in its focus. I have to see what's coming at me. So in that way, it's a little bit more complex. And also too, the outcome is always end game. So we're going from here all the way to submission or here all the way to a score. So there's going to be a lot of variability in between what's happening. It's not as simple as stay on top, hold somebody down. We're doing that, but now we also have to segment the hands, get to the elbows, get to the shoulders, put arms into extension, gain access to the shoulder line, cover the head. You know what I mean? Like, so it just the string of tasks become more complex.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's never how to, it's just, Again, the focus just becomes more complex and more variable.
There are more things that you have to manage. So people talk about cognitive load, which doesn't square well with, it's like an old school educational psychology concept.
Yeah, I still use that word.
it's very information processing driven.
Okay.
But there's something about it that can be useful to ecological approach. So I've been toying with the term perceptual load.
Okay.
To describe the complexity of the environment that you have to manage.
Okay.
And so with perceptual load, that's what's changing. That's what it sounds like to me. As things become more complexified, the perceptual load is becoming more representative of the game. And something that I think people are sleeping on now. So there's this problem with high level athletes in that wherever they train, there are often rarely a lot of other athletes at their level that can help challenge them to grow more. And so they become increasingly more dependent on a crippled old coach that doesn't train anymore and is increasingly detached from the actual experience of fighting. And they don't get the growth. So Ian Renshaw, when I interviewed him, he gave me the idea of like enhanced task complexification. That is creating tasks that are more perceptually demanding than free sparring.
Okay.
But are still representative.
Yes, yes. Dude, I love that we talked today. I've learned like six things. I'm so excited.
So for in jiu-jitsu, you can, depending on how you want to do it, you can use IBJJF rules to do this. And this can actually help you with enhanced, in creating enhanced arousal that's more representative of competition too. Okay. Within Taekwondo, Ian Renshaw, and he doesn't have the most experience with Taekwondo, he just is a master of constraints-led approach, and he came up with this idea because he's a genius. Yeah. And so he said, you can experiment with starting. There's a few things you can do. You can start a Taekwondo athlete, and this can work for boxing, kickboxing, anything with points. You can start a Taekwondo athlete with down on points. So they start the round, which is not normal. When you start a competition, everybody starts at zero. Yep. But instead of starting at zero, you start down.
Right.
And so now you have to find a way to come back. And you can add other handicaps too.
It's basically for sure. We've played games like that. Yep. Yeah, for sure.
And so you can do that. There's almost even an element of that in task simplification when you start somebody in a locked triangle.
Yeah, exactly.
And the person
yeah.
with no experience in escaping triangles must now navigate very quickly how to break a triangle. Because it's so simplified, it's not a danger. But it is almost an example of task complexification inside of task simplification.
But actually, no, it isn't almost. It is. Because my advanced guys, we talk about this. When we do those very simple games, we start to work, they're actually harder. Like the perceptive demand is higher, right?
Yeah.
So like you suggested, and it's true, but we talk about it all the time, you know, like trying to stop D's guard pass is much more difficult in a regular round than it is if we set up a situation that we want to start from, even if I give him a little bit of an advantage.
Yeah.
Because again, we're now looking at it from a different starting point. So we're picking up new information. And sometimes when the starting point isn't novel, like, well, I mean, novel in the sense that we don't know when it's going to come, like in time novel, not like novel in alignment, but novel in time, like when it's actually harder because now I'm prepared. Like now I'm in my mind, I'm like, okay, I'm looking for this. I'm looking for this. I'm looking for this. And it sharpens my, you know, perception. So that now I can focus all my actions on defeating him in this way. So it increases challenge. It does increase complexity. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And it gives you repetitions. So we're not doing anything different from traditionalists in the sense that they teach the defense to the triangle immediately.
Right.
What we're doing different is that we're ensuring that you have experience live defending the triangle. Because when I started jiu-jitsu, it was so rare for me to get somebody in a triangle position.
Correct.
So the only way that I got, the only way I could get a triangle position is on somebody way less experienced than me. And so that's the only way I got experience actually trying to control and do and finish the triangle, which is really inefficient. And there's so many different things that you can't account for when you do it the traditional way, because the focus is on getting to the triangle, not necessarily maintaining control and finishing. But also, I got you get guaranteed reps defending it.
Yes.
Because if you're the top dog in the room, nobody's putting a triangle on you.
Zero.
So you're not practicing defending triangles that often.
Yeah.
Which is why purple belts circumvent this by purposely putting themselves in bad situations when they roll with lower belts. They kind of naturally correct the traditional way of training by creating their own opportunities in free sparring.
For sure. For sure. No, I think that's an absolute great point. I didn't say, I think it's great. That's true.
Cool. All right. What else do I have here? Let's see. Okay. I wanted to address the teaching moves thing.
Okay.
Something I've noticed going back to the bad faith argumentation and like this sort of quasi-intellectual streak that people have. I noticed that people like to redefine terms into oblivion and they don't care how you define the term.
Right.
And so they look at how you're pretty clear about what teaching moves means to you in a traditional sense. And then you say sure. You don't teach moves because you're not teaching side control.
That's right.
You're teaching a position which spans the spectrum of north, south, and every type of side control.
I'm teaching pinning.
Yeah, pinning. You're teaching pinning. You're not teaching individual discrete procedures for control from different artificially sliced up snapshots.
Right.
So can you address people who say that you are in fact teaching moves because you're teaching lock submission in states?
Yeah. Okay. So here we go. When to the traditional approach of all jiu-jitsu schools, they will say, we're going to warm up with like movement or a drill. Okay. And an instructor will show anywhere between 10 to 25 steps to achieve an outcome. They will call this the JT Torres knee cut. Now, JT, I love you, man. I'm not making fun of you. I'm just using your name because it's the first one to come to my mind because you're a badass knee cutter. So please, if you, and you're going to listen to me, but either way, I love you, dude. So, but anyway, let's call it the JT knee cut, right? And so say the JT does it a very specific way, right? And so he goes, this step. That's a move. Okay. You're taking a snapshot in time. You're looking at a man's ability to do something in maybe one or two matches, and you're trying to replicate the solution he came up with in that time relative to that player, relative to that resistance. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you are trying to get people to learn jiu-jitsu by reteaching that moment. You are teaching a move. I do nothing like that at all. I try to teach outcomes that are physically certain, based on the way two bodies engage invariantly as it relates to immobilization or the resistance thereof and strangulation and breaking.
Yeah.
That's a different thing. So I don't, what I call our guard passing is segmentation, because I need to get access to center mass to start pinning. Okay. So after putting on after getting close to you and making connections and putting you on your back, which is the first stage of the pinning process, I now have to get past what's in front of me. And we do so in its segments. So I teach people how to immobilize their opponent by engaging with the legs in such a way that we're passing them to get access to center mass. So the first thing we learn about is what would be the most stereotypical way that a person would stop us from achieving this end. Well, they'll put their feet and hands on us. So we play games that teach the student how to take the feet and hands off and get closer to center mass, right? And we define these lines. We give these parameters, feet, knees, hips, okay? But inside, outside. You know, and then we can make it more complex. Now, once we're at the knees, we have to get the knees out of the way because we want to get the hips. So we go through around over under the knees to get the hips. Now, this is general. I'm trying to speak about what I teach. But again, these task focuses, objectives, language can change relative to the room, relative to the moment, relative to what our students are producing. Mm-hmm. But that's the general scope that I teach. Segmentation. I teach pinning. I teach isolation. I teach immobilization. I teach mobilization. I don't teach what these people think I'm teaching. Like, we use the common terms when we discuss it with the public. So when you come to one of my students at a tournament, like, hey, buddy, that was a nice head and arm. My student's like, what the fuck is that? My student knows you're trying to say, he knows you're trying to say to them, but my student has never learned a head and arm. Mm-hmm. He learned how to compress the neck in a situation where the arm and head were included in his closure. Now, again, I'm not being unnecessarily vague here. I'm just saying there's a connection with the language I use and how my students learn to access these outcomes. But I don't teach the outcomes. They emerge. They emerge. And that's what people can't get behind. They think that I'm lying. And what I described is exactly what I do. So if anyone is listening, not that you will, does that clarify things, or did I just babble on into oblivion?
No, it clarifies. I think people are hung up. First of all, someone's going to say, well, he just teaches concepts. That's all he's doing.
Okay. I use concepts to inform my task focus relative to the outcome. You can't teach a concept. You use it as a guide. A concept is a general idea. It's like people use this fucking word, but they don't know what it means. Right? So if I ask somebody, what's one of the major concepts that governs guard passing? You know what? I bet I'm one of the only people in the world that would use this word to describe it. Closeness. Closeness is a concept, because closeness is the initial proxy for control. Control starts with taking away planes of existence by manipulating your behavior psychologically or physically. And the first way that we try to exhibit this pressure is to get closer, right? So that's a concept. So now, okay, how can we explore closeness? Right. So I designed games to explore closeness. Segmentation is one of those games. Mm-hmm. And so I know nobody's thinking this complexly because I've talked to them. They don't know what they're talking about. And again, this is the difference. I know what I'm talking about. This isn't an accident. I didn't just wake up and say, okay, guys, we're starting the Mao arm locks today. Like, anyway, didn't mean to get passionate about it, but that's my explanation.
Real quick before I put you back into the podcast. Want to take your knowledge and practice of the ecological or constraints-led approach to the next level? Go to combatlearning.com/waitlist to join the waiting list for our combat learning workshops. You'll have direct access to me to work through the problems you're experiencing on your mat or bounce off ideas, and you'll collaborate with other coaches who are working through the same problems. The waiting list for the second cohort of my combat learning workshops is now open. The first cohort filled up quick. There might be one or two spots still open if they don't reply, but this one likely will fill up too. Don't wait, because there might not be a third cohort and there definitely won't be a fourth. Go to combatlearning.com/waitlist, WAITLAIST, to ensure you get to the next cohort.
Yeah. The problem is all the names, the nomenclature, the system of nomenclature artificially makes jujitsu seem more complex than it is. Jujitsu is complex, but jujitsu is not an infinite library of moves, stimulus responses, counters and counters and counters to counters and attacks. It just isn't. You can't, just because you can look at something that emerges reliably in a certain way does not mean, and you can put a name on it, right? That doesn't mean that it is a discrete thing that you can teach to somebody to reliably do. If you teach something to somebody and they eventually end up getting it, it's because they figured out the information and the pressure of where to use it. And in other words, they rediscovered it. And what you did at best, yes, yes, teaching them the technique, was sort of prime their attention. You didn't make them be able to use it. You primed their attention. They started to get an idea of how their body should move. And then through a long process of trial and error, they started to figure out ways to make something look that looks like that work. But it's different every single time. What Lucas Lepre does, and when I went to his school, when he teaches in long, complex sequences. What Lucas Lepre does when he is passing guard is creating and responding to energies, to pressure. And what he does is in direct response to the pressure that he's feeling. And that requires adaptability between novel circumstances. It does not involve recalling and executing a sequence of discrete movements and tactics. And so you do not get the adaptability to novel situations. Lepre can deal with something he's never done with before adequately. He might even still win. But that's because he has so much experience.
Right. That's why we say that what we're doing is making our students immune to novelty. Right.
Yes.
These are, honestly, man, these are deep concepts. It took a really fucking smart people a long time to figure out. Right. And we're just, you know, not you. I'm coming to myself. I'm just a fucking knucklehead mat rat who wants to learn how to do this. And so it took me so many years to understand this. So imagine the average person arguing. They haven't done a little bit of not only what I've done, you've done, or even the people who are teaching us about this. So they don't, again, what you just said is a beautiful way to describe exactly why I designed program the way I do. Again, that's what we're making flexible and adaptable athletes that can respond to novelty in real time against real resistance or non-agreed upon resistance. So I don't know, man. But
I think that's it. I think we beat the issue into the ground, submitted it, and then beat the corpse some more. So,
man, I love it, dude. This is great. I really needed this, because I've been like stressing out. I call Scott. Me and Scott like just fucking go off for like, we went off like 2 hours like 2 days ago, and it's just nice to be able to speak how I really understand things to somebody who understands what I'm saying, because it makes me feel like I'm not insane. You know what I mean? Because I'll be sitting there like, am I fucking up that badly? And really, I do like criticism, and I really look forward to it, because I do want to go back and become a better educator. I do want to understand the science better. I do want to apply the science better, and I want to teach other people how to do it too. Like, that's what I want to do. I don't want to sell a BJJ Fanatics DVD. You know what I mean? I want to engage with my community so that we can learn from each other and we can all grow.
Yeah.
But I know because I've got an abrasive personality and people think I'm an asshole, blah, 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 that I'm almost barring myself from doing that. But that's what I'm really trying to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And not to defend myself and whatever, but the reason my attitude comes out is I'm super serious about this. And if you try to engage me on a level that is not as serious as mine, you're going to lose my attention very quickly. And I'm probably just going to like poo-poo you away. Because who has time for that shit? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Who has time to jump on a podcast for someone to tell them what they're thinking? Just ask them. That's why I'm sitting here in front of you.
Yeah.
Don't put words in my mouth. Don't ask what my favorite ice cream flavor is. It's, you know, Jesus Christ.
Like, 90% of jiu-jitsu podcasts are asking the same questions, mostly social, and then reinforcing the same tired advice. Listen to your instructor, do your reps, put your drills in. Training has to suck. You can't roll all the time. Just things that aren't true. You don't have to listen to your instructor. I don't know if you knew that.
No, not at all. I tell my
unless
guys.
Unless he's ecological, then you have to listen to him.
But then I tell my guys, like, I am not a man of authority. I'm a man of reason. Yeah. The only reason I'm here doing this is because I took up the mantle and I love jiu-jitsu more than you. That's it. That's it. I'm the same as you. That's it. So again, don't listen to me. Just get involved. And if you disagree, let's talk about it. If you have a question, let's talk about it. But let's go towards an end, right? But I think the reason we see that in the Jiu-Jitsu podcast is the lifestyle bro runs the world. Because most people aren't struggling how to adapt to variation and novelty. Most people are struggling with how to get off the fucking couch. You know what I mean? And yeah. that's really the problem, you know? They're so confused by their lack of energy or the emotions they're feeling in their social environment or, you know, the magic they're seeing these high-level dedicated athletes perform. That's what they're worried about. They're not worried about what they're really doing, which is what I'm worried about. So that's why I bump heads. It's just because I'm trying to reach a different level of understanding. And they're trying to understand who Greg Souders is as a person. You don't want to know me as a person.
They're having a different discussion. They're not having the real discussion.
Correct.
They're not on the real issue. They're not trying to discuss the real issue. They're trying to either find an excuse to dismiss you or learn things that don't matter about.
Dude, I completely agree
about training. Which is it's if you don't see it, it's hard for you to see it. But once you do see it, you can't unsee it, and you start to get a little less patient. In the discourse.
No, for real. I feel like that. It's sad, man, because I don't want to be like that. Like, I know, like, I'm aggressive. I know, I do. Like, my personality is not for everybody. I know that. But I do want to engage. I just, man, you guys got to work a little harder. You got to kick yourself in your own ass.
Relationship takes two, okay?
Yeah, come on, man. Dude, and it's funny. My students know. Like, I'm with them morning to night, no matter what. Like, coach, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. We need this. I'm up. Let's go. Where are we going? Like, again, I'm about what I say I'm about. And again, if you're not, then we can't get along.
Cool.
We can't get along.
All right, man. Where can people find you if they want to reach out and pick your brain?
GD Souders on Instagram or at Standard Jiu-Jitsu. I always tell people, you can follow Standard Jiu-Jitsu. We post stuff on there, but don't message them. Okay. I have another guy running that. So if you want to message me, at GD Souders, and I'll do my best to get to your questions. I'll do my best to communicate with you. And I really do try hard. And so if you have some questions, please reach out. I love talking to you guys. So continue. But that's it. And don't email me either, because emailing is for my school. These are the students who actually want to come in and learn. And so if you bog down my emails with all these asinine questions and stories about your life, I'm sorry. I want to hear them, just not on my email. Okay. So don't email me, guys, if anyone's listening to this.
To clarify, he called them asinine, but he does want to hear them. So just don't send them to his email.
I'm only calling you asinine because you sent him my email. Like, hit me up on IG. We're going to be best buddies. Like, and anyway, I'm sorry, guys. Again, don't mean to be an ass, but just please hit me up on IG and I got you.
I get you. It's asinine with respect to your business. Don't send stuff like that to your business. Send it to you personally.
Please, please. That's it.
All right, man. Always a pleasure. Thank you for coming on.
For sure, brother. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to the Combat Learning Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, remember to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. It really helps us out. Finally, this episode, including the intro music, is produced by Micah Peacock. Thanks in advance, and I'll see you on the next episode.